I don't know if you notice this, but loan officers kind of have an ego, right?
No, and I never noticed.
Doesn't come across on the podcast and Zoom.
Not, realtors don't either. So I'm like,
no, no, absolutely not.
They should all be like daycare workers.
The most inspiring stories from today's most successful mortgage brokers. Join your host, Scott Peckford, on I Love Mortgage Brokering.
Hey, Broker Nation, Scott Peckford here. Today on the show, I have Joe Allen. Joe is a senior mortgage lending officer at Quantic Bank based out of New York. And we have a great conversation about hiring people, about the importance of being a creative problem solver, and some of the things he considers when selecting a business partner. I think you're going to enjoy this conversation with Joe. Also, I talked to Ben McCabe from Bloom Finance about current trends in reverse mortgages. Before we jump into these episodes, I want to give a shout out to our title sponsor, Finmo. Finmo is a Canadian mortgage application, document collection, submission platform designed specifically for Canadian borrowers and brokers. It's extremely easy to use. It automatically knows as the client's filling out the application, it's figuring out what documents to ask for. When you get that app in, you can then go and search Lender Spotlight for all the rates and guidelines to figure out where the best place to send that loan. And then finally, when you go to hit submit, it's got some smart submission notes and it basically pulls all the key data and puts it into the notes so that it's really easy for your underwriter to figure out what's going on with the file and give you a yes. Check them out at lenders.com/finmo and check out this conversation with Joe and then Ben. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself and your business.
Sure. I'm a VP, Senior Lending Officer at Quantic Bank. I've been in the mortgage business roughly 15 years. I've been with Quantic almost since the inception. They've been around 13 years. I've been with them about 12 years now.
Right. So how did you get into mortgages? Because most, you know, kids want to be a firefighter or they want to be a police officer. No, I want to be a mortgage banker or something. Like nobody says that.
I actually wanted to be a soccer player, but I still play. But many, many years ago, I was going to school and I wasn't sure what field I wanted to get into. I liked finance, but I was still trying to find my feet. A good friend of mine, his brother owned a real estate office in Long Island. And so he convinced me to go work with him. I started off doing real estate sales. I did pretty good. I was averaging one or two houses a month my first year, but it wasn't my calling. I enjoyed the real estate investing side of it, but I didn't enjoy the real estate sales side of it.
So and, you were like acting as a realtor, you mean? Or a real estate agent?
I was a realtor. I was selling houses. And then across the hall.
We have to end this podcast right now. No, just kidding. this call is over. We love realtors. I'm just teasing.
Listen, it gives me perspective, right? I know what they go through on a daily basis. So it's been super helpful. But across the hall from the real estate company was a mortgage broker. Really, really charismatic guy. I met him because he was trying to get my real estate business. And he mentioned to me that he had classes twice a week, once in English, once in Spanish. Didn't speak Spanish, but I went to both. So I learned how to speak Spanish and the mortgage lingo through those classes, fell in love with the business and been married to it ever since.
So are you bilingual? You can speak Spanish now totally?
Fluent enough. A mortgage consultation.
I can just order a couple of beers in Mexico. That's about it for me. But okay.
That's just as important.
It's important. Yeah. So before we jump into the rest of your story, I'd love to ask about a quote that's had an impact on your life or business. I love quotes. They're memorable. They're portable. So what's a quote that's really had an impact on you?
Not really a quote, but more of a question. So one of the founders of Quantic Bank, Stephen Schnall, recently, unfortunately, passed away in a motorcycle accident. When I first started to work for Steve, we used to do a lot of portfolio lending. And there was a two-person credit committee. It was Steve and his partner, George. And in order for us to have a loan even considered, we used to have to present it to them. So we used to have to walk into their office and give them a synopsis of the loan, the borrower, why we think it should be made. And Steve would ask me, Joe, if the money was coming out of your pocket to lend, would you give these people a loan? Right. And so that question always stuck with me because a lot of loan officers don't think like the bank. They think like a loan officer, right? And no, this is a good loan. This is a good loan. It fits the guidelines. But just because something fits the guidelines doesn't always mean that it should be made. It doesn't mean that it's a good loan, that it's a loan that's going to perform. And so that gave me a little bit of power. It gave me a good sort of arrogance, more professionalism. And it gave me, most importantly, perspective. When you're speaking with someone, when you're negotiating with someone, to not just think of yourself, but to put yourself in their shoes see what it is they want, and then kind of merge the two so that you can come to a deal, come to an agreement. So that question that Steve used to always ask me has just stuck with me for the past 12 years.
Right. So you said portfolio loan. So what do you mean by a portfolio loan? What was that exactly?
Most banks, brokers, what they offer are agency loans. So conventional, FHA, VA, they make the loan and they ultimately sell it off into the secondary market. A portfolio loan is a sort of proprietary loan product that a bank will have where they make their own guidelines and they make the decisions and they keep the loan on their books typically. So they'll close the loan and they'll continue to service the loan for its entirety.
Right. So hence why would you lend them your own money is a good question. So exactly. Okay, have there been situations where something didn't look quite right, but you felt like, hey, I still think this is a good loan? Like, because it could be the opposite too. Be like, hey, yeah, I think that this, or is that just a filter for removing loans, or is it can be a filter to also say yes to things? Because you're looking at a holistic approach. Yeah, I'm curious about that.
I've learned to trust my gut. Doing this for 15 years, there have been instances where I've been burned and I always said to myself, I knew better. Like this person just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
You can tell. If you have that sort of experience, if you've done that many mortgage consultations, you know who's going to pay you and who isn't. So no, it's pretty black and white for me at this point.
Right. So you got that. Okay. And then, so would you mind sharing something that you failed at? Because I always find that with failure, there's always a lesson in it when you look back. Sometimes maybe not the moment, but some of our best lessons come from it. So I'm curious at something that you failed
Absolutely.
At, what you learned.
Yeah. As I mentioned previously, real estate investing was always something that was a passion of mine. It was an interest. It's something that I've enjoyed doing. And when I first started, I bought a couple houses with a partner and the market turned. And long story short, we didn't do so well. And my partner ended up bailing on me, moved down south. I was stuck with a large private loan. And it took me a couple years. I negotiated with the lender, but I paid him back in full, completely every single penny that I owed him. As a result, he obviously didn't go after me. He went after my partner. But that lesson just taught me, if you are going to pick a partner, make sure they're bringing something to the table. Don't just do business with your friends, right?
Right.
So I've done some partnerships since, and they've been very successful because I've taken the time to think about it. I've picked the right person, people with experience, people with money, people that bring something to the table that I don't, right? A different skill set. So that's a failure that I've definitely learned from.
Dave Ramsey says the only ship that always sinks is a partnership. Which is pretty harsh. I'm like, I don't know.
That's pretty grim.
But yeah, it's pretty grim. They all say, okay. So I actually like this idea of a partnership. So when you're now looking at a partnership, you think one of the more recent ones you've done, what sort of questions go through your mind or how do you filter? Like you touched on somehow you're overlapping, complementary, but they got different skill set or different whatever they bring to the table. But what else do you look for in an effective partnership?
So for example, one of my most successful partnerships now, my partner owns a construction company. And so a big part of what we do involves construction. And so that allows me to, because my main business is mortgage banking, right? That's what I'm great at. That's where I need to focus most of my time. I don't need to be on a construction site looking at estimates, grilling jobs. And this is somebody that I trust. This is somebody that is financially stable. There's never a question of, we need to come up with some money. Can we make it happen? It's always yes. Works super hard, extremely motivated. So he brought a lot to the table, everything that I do not have experience in that I honestly don't want to deal with, he deals with, and all of the other stuff, the financing of the properties, the location of the properties, all that stuff is on me. So it's a perfect marriage in that respect.
Right. So this is like a side thing that you have. It's just like a personal project that you're doing. That's not part of your mortgage business, right? You're more in that capacity. You guys are just doing development or something together and you're providing.
Yeah, just investing.
Right.
Planning for the future.
Right. Okay, cool. So what's the single best change you made to your business in the last 12 months? I mean, man, the last 6 months even has been a little crazy with what's happened. We all of a sudden were like, oh, the party just changed. The party's over. So I'm curious what kind of changes you've made.
I don't know if you noticed this, but loan officers kind of have an ego, right?
No, and I never noticed.
It doesn't come across on the podcast and Zoom.
Not, realtors don't either. So I'm like.
No, absolutely not.
They should all be like daycare workers.
It took me a while, right? When you know you're really good at something, you want your staff to emulate that. But it takes a while to realize that nobody's ever going to be you, but that's okay. And they can perform the tasks in a different way, but be just as successful. And so sometimes you need to let go and just let them grow, let them succeed, let them gain confidence. So I was thankful enough. Look, there was a brief time when COVID hit that we didn't know what we were going to do. To be honest with you, I was just in the park playing soccer every day because there was no mortgage business to be had. But it allowed me to rebuild my team. And now I have the right pieces in play. And I've let go. I've let the team gel and I've let them do their own thing. And the business has quadrupled, you know, not just because of low rates, not just because of high demand, but because of customer satisfaction, because of me having more time to bring in more business instead of me micromanaging the minute details, which are important, but I don't need to be involved with those.
Right. One of the things I found, so I have a mortgage company. I'm based out of Canada and we've been growing like crazy and I've been hiring people, and hiring people has been the big challenge. It's like, you know, and so what kind of things do you do? And I feel like I said to my team recently, I'm like, if I could have one superpower, it would be finding people. Like, because if you get the right people, the process is like, they can build the processes. I could build perfect processes and I hire the wrong people. They're not going to follow them. They're going to just burn them to the ground. And so what kind of things when you're hiring, sounds like you've got a great team now. What kind of things do you look for in order to like identify, hey, this person, they seem to be a fit. I'm curious what you're doing or filtering there.
Back to a sports analogy, right? If you're building a team in sports, the biggest part of it for me is balance, right? So just like a partnership, if you have a team in place and there's something that's missing or, you know, there's a certain flavor that you need to complete the dish, if you will, balance is what I look for. Yes. Are they competent? Do they have the skill set I need? Are they personable? Sure. But are they going to gel with the rest of the team? And are they going to leave the team more balanced or create an imbalance? And if there's an imbalance, then it's probably not a great fit, even if they're well qualified.
Right. I'm curious if you had to fire anybody or like wasn't a fit, because I know I have. Sometimes I feel like, oh my gosh, like, I don't want to, you know, talk about this guy, Trump, who's, you know, you're fired, but I felt like in the last little bit, half of my hires were great and half were. And that's why I said to our team, we need to get better at it. So like, how do you know, when do you know? And then what have you done about it when you see that? This is basically a coaching session for me, Joe. I'm just like,
No worries.
I basically come on these shows and whatever thing I'm dealing with, I'm like, I bring it to these people and say, what would you do? Like, that's
it. I use it and, to build my business.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What I'm doing. Why wouldn't you? Well, I mean, it is like anything in life, it's a numbers game. So, you know, you shouldn't be taken aback by, you know, the amount of failures that you have, right? You learn from them. But I have had to fire a couple people, not many, but usually the people I've had to fire, it's because, quite frankly, they weren't truthful in their skill sets or, you know, their abilities, right? You know, if you're an older person, which is fine, you know, we're not ageists. I don't care how old you are, as long as you get the job done. But you tell me technology is your strength. That's great. But then you come work for us and it's clear that you can't technology is not your strength.
You can't
We don't copy and paste in the mortgage business, but you know, you basically lied to me, right? And so that's a really bad way to start a relationship. And so that's one example of where I've had to part ways.
You had to make some adjustments, right? Okay. Exactly. And so let me ask you this. So we've seen a big change in the market in terms of a lot of refi. So how was your business like refi versus purchase pre these rate hikes? And what does it look like now?
Pre-pandemic, I would say it was 85-15 purchase versus refi. I've never been a cold caller. I've never, you know, needed leads. I've always went out into the world and got my own business. Now, during the pandemic, it probably switched to 50-50. Maybe I was even a little refi heavy at one time. Now it's back to probably 90-10, not doing a ton of refis, mostly purchase business.
People aren't refining unless there is that really it makes sense for some big reason. So tell me about like the 90% business that's purchased. Do you work with a lot of real estate agents? Is it from just the bank's network? What are you finding working right now? And I don't know if your market is the same as ours, but it's definitely gotten a little bit, you know, buyers are kind of sitting back going, okay, they're watching a little bit more. What have you seen?
Yeah, New York is my primary market. Technology has allowed me to spread my wings, but New York is a very diverse, very resilient market. So even in downturns, people are always looking to buy. You know, New York is a hustle. New York is a grind. People are here to build wealth. So there's always business to be had here in New York. I've reduced the amount of realtors that I've worked with over the years on purpose. Listen, there's nothing better than a really good realtor. Just like there's nothing better than a really good loan officer. They're just hard to find. So I've scaled back the number of realtors I work with. I've increased the number of accountants, financial planners, attorneys. My past clients are my bread and butter. I get a lot of referrals from past clients.
What are you doing specifically? Because I read a stat recently that was done. It was a US stat. Surveyed 100,000 borrowers and only something like 8.3% of them could remember their loan officer's name after a year. It was a ridiculously low number that people could remember. So how are they remembering to refer you? And are you doing something, or is it just that you're super memorable and they just go, don't forget about Joe? So I'm curious.
I got to tell you, I think it's the latter. I've always invested time in people, getting to know them, giving them sound advice, not just on mortgages, on anything that they need help with. I always was, and I still am, a big believer of meeting people face to face. I do very few consultations via the phone. At a bare minimum, you have to jump on a Zoom meeting with me because I'm going to lend you a lot of money. And I'm also the person that's going to facilitate the biggest investment you're ever going to make. I at least got to see you with your camera on, right? We have to build a relationship here. So I've always done that. And as a result, people, they don't forget my name. Mm-hmm. They save my contact in their phone. We do advertise to the database of the past clients, but thankfully I've been blessed with having people come right back to me over and over and over again.
That's good, man. So what's a change you're planning to your business in the next kind of quarter? Is there something you're looking at going, okay, I've got to make some adjustments? What are you looking at making any changes to?
I'm looking to really, and I might be a little bit behind the curve here, but really perfect my CRM. One thing I haven't been great at, maybe I've taken it for granted a little bit, is that people just do come back to me. And I'm sure there's fallout. I'm sure there are people that, like you said, maybe forget my name.
You're who's your guy? I don't know.
Somebody else pulls their ear, right? I've had the same phone number. I've been at the same place for a long time. That helps. But just always being right there in people's face so that when their friends do say, hey, I'm buying a house, you got to use Joe. So that's something, while it's a little bit slower now with everybody on vacation, the change in rates, the change in the market, I can invest time into perfecting the CRM.
Right. Yeah, that's a smart thing to do. One of the things that I've heard about you is that you're a very positive mindset, in terms of you find solutions. And so I'm curious if you can think of a story or an example of something where people were like, I don't think that's possible, Joe. And you're like, no, I can figure this out. And what was the problem? And then how did you solve it? I find there's a lot of learning in seeing how other people see problems and then solve them.
It happens on a daily basis. And my girls always laugh at me because they'll think of killing a deal and they know they cannot kill a deal until they come to me first and we talk about it. And almost always we find a solution. Listen, I just had a client leave my office 30 minutes ago, where he was denied by another bank. And the reason is his wife's credit score is 590. One of the first things I was taught in this business is how to really analyze credit and, for lack of a better word, manipulate credit, right? So a lot of people have very, very small medical collections on their credit report, $200-$300. These are usually the result of a trip to the ER and this was the ambulance or the blood work and your insurance company, for whatever reason, didn't cover it because, person A didn't talk to person B, you never got the letter in the mail, et cetera, et cetera. There's a big push by the federal government for these creditors to delete these accounts. So clients here in my office, I called the collection company. We spoke to them and said, look, I'll pay you half of what I owe, but I want you to delete it from the credit report. They said, no problem. We paid. They're sending over a letter to delete it. I can get it removed from the credit report through my credit vendor in 3 to 5 days. The credit score is going to go from 590 to 750. So a little bit of work. It took me 20 minutes, but went from no deal to...
From a hard no to a yes.
Great deal. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. It was a little bit more work, but whoever they talked to didn't either have the skills or knowledge to know how to do that. And so then I'm curious about this. So in Canada, because we have healthcare included in our tax, but they tax us a lot and a lot of our money goes into, it's not a perfect system either, but We don't get those kind of things. So I'm interested about, you said that they want them to delete these credit things. So like, does that mean they just want them to eat the loss? And this has nothing to do with mortgages. I'm interested in, explain that part to me.
Sure. So you have three credit bureaus, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. They use different models to determine what your credit score is going to be. We use that credit score to determine whether or not you're credit worthy.
Yeah. Okay. That part I get. I was talking about the medical collections where there's like this push, you said, to have them delete them. So is it to delete them, or is it, do they want them to delete them, eat the loss, or just do they want them to, you know, collect some money and then delete?
No, you typically have to pay them. And look, the people typically do owe the debt. They just weren't aware of it.
Oh, I see. So they're just saying, hey, look, this $300 thing does not reflect a bad credit risk if everything else is good except this one issue.
Well, no, we're contacting the creditor directly and saying, look, I do owe you the money, but you didn't contact me in the proper manner. I don't want to fight it. I will pay you, but work with me. If I pay you, I need you to agree to delete this from the credit bureaus. I don't want to see this on my credit report.
Okay. That's what I was meaning at deleting. So I haven't heard I got to talk to a guy who's a credit specialist here in Canada, if they will delete them or if they'll just show them paid. Because like a lot of times for some of these small accounts where we are, it'll just show paid. It'll be like, okay, it was, you know, R9. I don't know if you guys use the same system. And then it's like, now it's been paid. So it's like, you know, account closed or whatever.
The bigger banks won't do that. Like a Wells Fargo, Capital One, they won't delete it. But these small collection companies, almost all of them delete.
Yeah, they get their money, that's easy for them, or they get some of their money back on it. Okay, so it has nothing to do with the podcast. If I can learn any little, it's like a thread of information that I'm like, I don't know what I'll use it for. So let me ask some rapid fire questions. So what's one thing people can't find out about you from Google?
I am the founder and actively involved in a real estate crowdfunding platform named Greic, G-R-E-I-C. Should be coming to market within the next 6 months. And basically, people are going to be able to come together, pool their resources, and purchase real estate investment properties together.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah.
G-R-E-I-C?
G-R-E-I-C, yep.
Cool, man. We'll have to keep an eye out for that. What's a movie everybody should watch at least once?
Oh, man. Well, we're talking about problem solving. Good Will Hunting. How do you like those apples?
Yeah. I watched it again recently as much older, and I was like, man, this movie's so good. Like,
so good.
When you watch it when I was younger, it was entertaining, but I saw a whole other level to it when I was older. Mm-hmm. It's like, and the movie didn't change, just my perception of it did. What's a software program or digital tool you couldn't run your business without?
Jungo. Jungo is a kick-ass CRM.
I've used it actually before. Some of my friends love it, some of my mortgage friends. So what do you think is going to happen with rates in the next 12 months? What's your sort of prediction? And we're gonna write this down and be like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I mean, I unfortunately believe it is going to be a dark and cold winter. I think it's going to be tough for a lot of people for a multitude of reasons, you know, fuel prices being one of them, but all of the economic conditions that are going on right now. But you can always pull some positives from an economic downturn. There's plenty of opportunities. I think rates will probably and hopefully somewhat stabilize through the winter. And I think ultimately that rates will continue to go up. We've been spoiled over the past 12 years or so, and we gave away a lot of things for free. And you know the saying, there's no free lunch. You know, you have to pay for all of this at some point. And we're going to have to pay through higher interest rates, and that's okay.
Yeah, we'll have to adjust to it, and we will. So remember the movie Back to the Future, where, you know, you get in the car and you travel back in time. And so if I could send you back to your first day as a mortgage broker, loan officer, and you could say, hey, man, you know, Joe, do these three things. What would you tell yourself?
Three things, huh?
Buy real estate in New York and hold on. Buy real estate anywhere and hold on. I'm just kidding. What would you say to do with your mortgage business?
Number one, keep impeccable records of all of your past clients, all of your acquaintances. You know, back when I started, we didn't have CRMs. Now the younger loan officers have that advantage. Everybody you talk to, everybody you touch needs to go in there and needs to receive content and continue to be sought after by you. So that's number one, because those databases are gold. Number two, took me a while to figure out that I could fire people, that I could fire realtors, that I could fire clients instead of just taking every piece of business that came across my desk. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to gain the confidence to say, you know what, my time is worth X and this person doesn't think it's worth that much. They're taking too much of it, right? Mm-hmm. They're wasting my time. They're bringing me, you know, you're a lot of times realtors are a reflection of their own clients. So a subpar realtor will give you subpar clients. So why even bother?
Yeah, if they're a gong show, their clients will be a gong show, and it'll just, it's all good. Right?
Gong show. That must be a Canadian saying.
You're basically a massive gong show. I don't even know where the phrase comes from. As I said it, I was like, wait a second. It's not a phrase I've used before on the show. So people be like,
If they're a catastrophe,
their clients will be a catastrophe. You know, if everything's last minute and they're running around, and you're probably going to get clients with the same pattern. And then it just sucks. Okay. Lastly, so the first was impeccable records. The second was be willing to fire people. What would be the last one?
Yeah. The second was really value your time. Don't waste your time with people that, you know. Number three would be valuing your services and not being afraid to charge. You know, when you're young in this business and you're uncertain of your skills, right? I don't care what anybody says. When you're new at this, you're not going to be supremely confident. You might act like you are, but deep down inside, you're not, because you're still learning. But you tend to just roll over a little too easy and not stand up for yourself and the fees that you are rightfully charging. So I feel like there was a lot of money that I left on the table over the first few years while I was learning the business, because I didn't have the confidence to demand the right fees, but that's no longer the case.
Right. Okay. That's awesome. So Joe, this has been lots of fun chatting with you. Where can people find you online?
You can go to quantic.com and you'll find my page there.
And then this crowdsourcing, is it going to be just in New York? Is it going to be like right across the country?
The properties initially be in New York. You can invest nationwide. The properties will eventually be nationwide, and the goal is to be able to bring in investors from all over the world. So
what's the smallest like denomination people can put into something like that, or have you figured that out yet? I'm not going to hold you this because it's not out yet.
We're still kicking it around, but I think the number is going to be $1,000.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, well, hey man, reach out to me when you get that thing up and going. I'd love to hear more what's happening with it. So
you got it,
sounds
Scott.
Like a cool concept. Thanks for chatting with me, Joe.
Yep. All the best. Take care.
Hey, thanks again for listening to my conversation with Joe. Hopefully you got a couple ideas from him for your business. A couple quick things. First, if you're a mortgage broker and you're like, man, I want to retool my business, go check out 10loansamonth.com, the number 10loansamonth.com. We've completely revamped how we introduce people into that program. It's very cool. Go check it out. We got some amazing coaches there that can help you. That's the number 10loansamonth.com. In this next segment, I'll be talking to Ben about trends in reverse mortgages. And personally, I think reverse mortgages are a huge opportunity right now, given what's happening with inflation. And so have a listen to this conversation. Hey, Ben, welcome to Ask the Experts.
Hey, Scott.
So, hey, let's talk about, you guys have seen a significant uptick in reverse mortgage origination in the last 3 to 6 months. And you've seen some trends. I always like to look for trends, for opportunities, for things that I'm missing. You got a couple of things that you've noticed. Why don't you share with us some of the trends that you've spotted in your files in the last little bit?
Yeah, just over the last couple of months, is kind of the economic turbulence has taken hold, starting to see some interesting things in our applicant mix and things in sort of in underwriting. So I think the first thing we're starting to see signals of is definitely some softness in property values. And this is not a universal phenomenon. It's not around all of our applicants, but it's sort of a little bit more niche and specific. So one area we're seeing a lot of softness is around that, you know, lakefront and recreational properties. You know, we do reverse mortgages for those types of properties. And obviously what we saw over the last year was that before that was a really big run up in those prices since, you know, with COVID, there was no travel. People had a lot of savings and mortgages were really cheap. There were a lot of bidders on those lakefront recreational properties. With travel opening up, mortgage rates going up, you know, a lot less demand for those types of properties, and that is taking hold. So we're actually starting to apply some pretty significant discounts to those lakefronts and recreational properties in anticipation that those prices are going to continue to fall.
Right. Okay. I think that's just a thing that we're seeing right across the board in terms of all markets. So you guys do investment properties with your product?
Not investment properties, but because we deal with kind of older borrowers, a lot of people sell their homes in the city and then move to their recreational property as primary.
The recreational property. When I heard recreational, I thought investment, but that makes sense. Okay. So recreational properties, yes, investment properties are not something you do. Okay. What's the other thing that you've noticed in trends?
Yeah. So the second thing that we're seeing, which is kind of counterintuitive given the economic turbulence, is that we're actually seeing an increase in the average credit profile of our applicants. And we were trying to figure out why that's happening. As we dug into the numbers, what was clear was that it wasn't that we were receiving fewer, you know, lower credit score borrowers. We're seeing a lot more higher credit quality borrowers as a percentage of our overall applicants. And as we dug into that, and as we had conversations with people, what we realized is just inflation is really starting to bite, you know, older folks that are on that sort of fixed income whose investment portfolios might have been impaired. And people that might have not been thinking about a reverse mortgage, you know, last year, you know, are starting to look at reverse mortgages as a solution to the problems that they're facing right now.
Right. And what's better than no payment? I mean, if you think about if my cost of fuel has gone up, food, all these other expenses, if I have a cash pay mortgage, you know, then that's going up in a lot of cases. So now if I have a line of credit, it's going up. And so going on a no payment option, I think, again, I'm not surprised at all. It sounds counterintuitive, but I'm actually, when you step back and you see the overall macroeconomics, I'm not surprised at all that more people that you would not traditionally think would consider a reverse mortgage are like, hey, I actually want that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it can make a lot of sense for folks, especially if you are trying to maintain cash flow. So that's cool. All right. What's kind of the third kind of trend that you've noticed?
Yeah. So there's obviously a few different use cases for reverse mortgages. We have people that are just looking to supplement their living expenses, people that need to fund home care, living inheritances, debt consolidation. But what we're seeing is just a really, really big spike in the percentage of our overall applicants that are using the reverse mortgage to finance out of that traditional cash pay mortgage, which isn't a surprise, right? With where the rates are going, you know, the immediate cash impact of higher rates for a traditional mortgage relative to a reverse, where there isn't that immediate cash impact. We're seeing a lot of people say, hey, I just can't afford to have this traditional mortgage anymore. I need to refinance into something with no payment. So just as a percentage of our overall applicants, a lot of people that are refinancing out of a traditional mortgage.
Right. I could see that being. And if you guys are listening to this, I mean, I think a great market opportunity right now is talking to financial advisors that deal with a lot of clients that, you know, maybe they have lines of credits that this would be a great product for right now. Hey, no payment on this at all. So person stressing out, you don't want them taking out investments. You don't want them like melting things down in this market. But if they're concerned about cash flow, why not just completely eliminate that for them in terms of the payment? So why don't we do a quick recap of these trends that you're noticing? And then hopefully you guys listening to this can give you some ideas to think about when this can make sense for your clients.
Yeah. So, I mean, number one is, I think probably brokers everywhere are seeing this, but just starting to see softness in certain property values and are layering that into our loan authorizations. Second thing we're seeing is an increase in credit quality of our borrowers on average because more higher credit quality borrowers are applying. And then the third thing we're seeing is just a lot more people that are deciding to refinance out of their traditional mortgage and into a no payment reverse option. And so I guess to summarize, just with bank cost of funds are going up, I mean, obviously just time stamping this recording, obviously the Government of Canada has increased rates by 100 basis points. We've already increased our rates, you know, 200 basis points since this time last year. Obviously, we'll likely have to respond to that increase in the Bank of Canada. So if you have a client that is thinking about a reverse mortgage, we definitely encourage brokers to act now.
Can you guys do rate holds? When does the rate get locked or set for the
application? Yeah, so we'll typically lock the rate when the application comes in. So we don't want the borrower to be penalized for, you know, appraisal delays or whatever. So we'll typically lock it at the time of application. And then there's a, you know, a rate lock. I think it's a 60-day rate lock typically to get the deal done from the time of
commitment. Right, you've got 60-day timeline from when they start to finish. But yeah, that's something else to consider. So if a broker has a file, how's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah. So, I mean, they can find us on bloomfin.ca and then they can send information and their inquiry to us at info@bloomfin.ca.
Right. Awesome. And if you guys are listening to this, again, reach out to Ben and his team. They're amazing. They've been growing like crazy. They can help you with getting these reverse mortgages funded for your clients. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, thanks again for listening today for my conversation with Joe and Ben. One last thing. If you are looking for ideas for your mortgage business, I would encourage you to go check out ilovemortgagebrokering.com. You can set up a free power search account, which allows you to keyword search all the past episodes, the entire inventory of shows, hundreds and hundreds of episodes. And if you want to look up something like reverse mortgage or, you know, partnership, any keyword you want, it'll take you to every episode where that word is mentioned. And you can literally jump to it and do research like you could not believe. It's completely free. Go check it out. And thanks again for listening to this episode.
This is an I Love Mortgage Brokering production.